Sufferings, it's your boy Marty here to introduce this rip of Rabbit Hole Recap. It was brought to you by our good friends at Unchained. Unchained is here to help you better secure your Bitcoin, to make it easier for you to buy Bitcoin, and to offer you financial services on top of your Bitcoin. Everything at Unchained revolves around 2 or 3 multi-sig collaborative custody. They have an IRA product, which historically has had a fee associated with it, but they ran a campaign earlier this year. It was massively successful, and they've officially dropped their fee to 21 cents. So if you want to transition your IRA from a traditional IRA into Bitcoin, you can do so very easily via Unchained and very cheaply, 21 cents. Go check it out. Go to unchained.com and use the code RHR at checkout for any of their services, whether that's concierge, onboarding, or anything else that they're offering, and you'll get $50 off that service or product. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at CoinKite. CoinKite builds the best hardware in the Bitcoin space. If you're watching the video, you can see this nice, beautiful block clock behind me, but they also have the Cold Card Mark IV, which is a hardware device. It's got 2 secure elements. It's the best way to create private public key pairs in an air-gapped way offline. They also have the Cold Card Q. Update on the Cold Card Q. Comes in many different colors, so you don't just need the plain plastic see-through. They've got many different colors now. They also have a new reseller. What would we call this? A product or a program that if you want to resell Cold Cards, they've really streamlined that process. So go to CoinKite.com. Check out all their products, whether it's a block clock, a Cold Card, a Q, Sats Card, Tap Signer. They've got it all. CoinKite.com. Still don't know if we have a promo code there. Try RHR. Try it and see what you get off. Last but not least, this rip was brought to you by our good friends at Stackwork. Stackwork is a cloud sourcing platform that combines the power of humans and AI. If you've listened to us discuss Simple Proof and Digital Witness and how they secured the Guatemalan election on the show, Stackwork and their distributed cloud sourcing workforce helped secure that Guatemalan election. Right now, they're looking for mobile developers. So if you are looking for a job in the Bitcoin space that is not only at the cutting edge of Bitcoin, but also AI, hit up Stackwork, go to their careers page, find it. They're looking for Swift and Kotlin mobile devs right now. So if you're a Swift or a Kotlin developer looking for a job in the space, looking to be on the cutting edge, go hit up Stackwork. And you can go to their website at Stackwork. That's STAKWORK.AI. Enjoy this rip. Okay.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
This might actually be live this time.
Looks like we're live.
It showed something up on YouTube. Yep, there it goes.
Yeah, we're live. We're live. We're live. Technical difficulties there, freaks. Woo dog.
Our software was updated between live streams. But we made it.
Martin, bull run. Pretty sure.
What?
I was just going to say Bull Run Rabbit Hole Recap is back.
Let's fucking go. It's a vibe, isn't it?
It is. It is. What a week. What a time to be alive. Just got lunch with Ryan Gentry from Lightning Labs. Vibes are high here in Austin. Discussing the events of the week, the potential for the future. And that's when we first went live. It's like, when's the rug coming? Are we getting rugged? It feels like you got to pinch yourself. Too much winning. Too short amount of time.
Do you know what I named this episode?
No.
The first Bitcoin election. It really feels like it's the first Bitcoin election. The first of many.
It certainly feels like it.
It was pretty crazy. Like, you didn't have to watch CNN, New York Times, any prediction markets, anything. All you had to do was watch the Bitcoin price. And as soon as it just fucking started running, like Bitcoin called the election first.
It really did. It ran up to 71. And like a half an hour later, ran up to 72. And then like an hour later, ran up to 75. New all-time highs. Yeah,
that was the confidence rating, right? It was just like pricing it in. I mean, you have to think about like nothing. So like right now I'm in Brazil. I was just up at the coast in Jeri, which is fucking beautiful. There's a Bitcoin circular economy up there. And about 40 minutes before this show, I landed in Sao Paulo, sat through Sao Paulo traffic. You know, it's one of the largest cities in the world. It's the largest city in South America. There's over 20 million people here. Fucking crazy huge city. And then I got into the hotel to rip the show because I care about you freaks. And it's important that we have RHR every week. But my point is, I was at a bar in Jeri on the street in this nice little beach town. Later, because this time zone is like 2 hours in the future. And no other markets are open. It's literally the only market in the world that trades 24/7, 365 is Bitcoin. Like all eyes on the US election, and the only place that people can price that in is Bitcoin. And we watched it happen in real time. None of the other elections had Bitcoin like reach this level. And obviously Bitcoin is a major political talking point in this particular run. But I think going forward, just in general, this idea of Bitcoin as this macro thermometer is going to become more and more obvious to people.
Yeah. I mean, it's very obvious right now. In big news of the week, U.S. election. Donald Trump is our 47th president. I think many people, or the mainstream, was utterly shocked that he won. Not only that he won, but the style in which he won, when the Electoral College won the popular vote, and Republicans have the House and the Senate. Many are saying, I think rightfully so, he has a mandate to push through the policies that he campaigned on. That is the signal that American citizens sent at the polls this week, and Bitcoin is part of that campaign. And I think that's getting priced in right now. I could not be more astonished. I was cautiously optimistic that he was going to win. I thought we would be counting votes until next week. I think the speed and the veracity with which the election results came in was stunning to most people. We stand here today with a president who has said he wants to acquire a strategic Bitcoin reserve. He's got the means to do that rather easily if he wants to, with Republicans controlling the House and the Senate. And we are in open water Bitcoin price territory right now.
Fucking love open water Bitcoin. I don't think many people thought that it would be such a dominant victory. But if you're shocked by the outcome, like you have to just really self-evaluate your like where you get your information from. I'm glad the election happened and it wasn't canceled. I hit Marty with an invoice for election canceled that.
And hey, freaks, I want you to know too, Matt forgot that we doubled up at one point and I asked him to send me another invoice.
Marty deserves all the credit in the world. I actually sent him an invoice for half the amount that he owed me. And he reminded me that we doubled down. So Marty, I've been in Argentina, Uruguay, Paraguay, and then multiple areas of Brazil, like Iguazu. And then I went up to Jeri, and then we came down here to Sao Paulo for SatsConf. So a lot of flights, a lot of bad reception. Is it House? It's House and Senate. I know that the Senate went Republicans, House too, right?
Yep.
So popular vote, electoral vote, House and Senate. Like, I mean, it's a clear mandate. was very obvious. It became like very obvious, and the concession happened relatively quickly. So we'll see. I hope he upholds his campaign promises. Single most important promise is Ross. He's expecting to be freed. It would fucking devastate me if he gets rugged. But no matter how you cut it, besides, I think it, even if he fulfills no promises, I don't think I could be more bullish on Bitcoin. Like, this is, like, imagine not owning Bitcoin right now.
I couldn't tell I got my hair cut today. I had to cheat on my go-to barber because I didn't have the car. He's a little bit far away, so I went to my backup and I tipped her in Bitcoin, taught her how to get on Bitcoin through Cash App. She had Cash App, and she was asking me, she's like, where do I put my money? I've got money. My dad's telling me to put it in Roth IRA. I got to invest it. I was like, just put it in Bitcoin.
Stay humble, stack sets.
Yeah. It does feel weird. I mean, there's comments on the election. And I think for any non-Americans listening in, I think many people in Europe were surprised by this election. I don't think the European listeners of this show were very surprised, but it's making me extremely optimistic, if only for the fact that people have woken up that America was on a pretty bad path towards socialism and the government interjecting itself in individuals' lives. And not saying that won't happen to any extent moving forward, but I think that is the clear message that is going out there. And Trump has campaigned on making the government smaller, making it more efficient, and freeing the economy from overregulation, which is something I'm hopeful for. Like Matt said, I think the first big signal we'll get if campaign promises are being delivered and acted upon will be Ross. I expect to see him day one commuted. And if not, the skepticism will begin to rise.
Do you realize that we are one of the only major countries that has like a 3-month period between government switchover after election? Like in the UK, they have their election and then just like, boom, like one guy moves out, the other guy moves in. It should be a very interesting, like cyclically, this 3-month period. Like if you go by Bitcoin cycles, right? Like Bitcoin is definitely more of a macro asset right now. But if you go by Bitcoin cycles, this 3-month period post-halving at this time of year is when Bitcoin tends to
get a little weird. Some of its
biggest purchasing power gains, price gains. And then meanwhile, it's just the sitting duck period. It's like this like limbo area.
The lame duck period.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy. I mean, it seems like to me, it's pretty antiquated. Like it's a kind of insane concept, especially when you compare us to the rest of the world. But we'll see how this plays out. So in terms of like promises and whatnot, we won't even fucking know until.
Well, it seems like he's moving fast. I mean, we've heard rumblings through the grapevine that people are being tapped on the shoulder within the industry to figure out who should be positioned where to craft policy as it pertains to Bitcoin. Big announcement yesterday was that Rep. Thomas Massey will head, I believe, the Department of Agriculture, and he's already reached out to Joel Salatin, the regenerative farmer, to head the USDA, and that's like public now. So it seems like behind the scenes, they're developing their team. And that was one of the things, I don't know if you guys were watching MSNBC in Brazil on election night, but I stayed up way too late.
We were not watching TV. Like I said, the price, we were just getting, I got an all-time high notification from Strike, and Leishman was sitting next to me and he sent out the all-time high notification on River. We had coconuts in front of us. We had coconuts and drinks in front of us. That was my election night.
That's not a bad election night. That's not a bad crew.
Pretty good.
But I was watching MSNBC to bask in some Schadenfreude. And one of the things they mentioned on the late night coverage of the election was the fact that the Trump campaign has not been coordinating with the White House transition teams that incoming
or even like before you know that you're incoming, you're supposed to be talking with this quote unquote transition team to figure it out. And apparently they've stonewalled the transition team, Trump learning lessons from 2016. And they're like, no, we're going to do it ourselves. And I think there are signals out there that they're moving rather quickly. And I think the outcome of this election also proves that it's highly likely that there was some fraudulent activity in the 2020 election. And I would make the argument that you should just start getting to work now, because Biden isn't all there. Kamala Harris is completely dejected, obviously. Nothing's going to get done. We've got a lot to get done. And that's what Ryan Gentry and I were just discussing at lunch. I think the big question in the mind of Bitcoiners, the Strategic Reserve Bill has been crafted. How long does it take to get through the House, the Senate, get signed into law? And I think this lame duck period plays into our favor, because as we know, President Trump is a man who likes winning. And if Bitcoin goes up the way it has in previous cycles during this lame duck period, you could get him inaugurated and he's like, why aren't we buying Bitcoin yet? And things just get expedited through the House and through the Senate and land on his desk. I would not be surprised if we have a strategic Bitcoin reserve bill signed by June of next year.
You want to bet?
Ooh, I do like this bet. Let's bet.
June 1st of next year?
June 30th, end of Q2.
Okay, June 15th, 100,000 sats.
Let's make it two.
200? You're trying to win back the election cancellation? Yeah. Okay, boom, done.
200,000. Are we getting odds? Or is it?
No, you're not getting odds.
Okay.
Do you want odds?
I don't need them. No.
You're not getting odds. 200,000 sats, book it, freaks. I love these types of bets because they're great hedge bets. Like, I'm all in Bitcoin. So if the strategic reserve happens, I'll pay you your 200,000 sats and I'll be having a very good day.
June 15th.
I will just reiterate one more time that it rubs me the wrong way that it's seeded with Bitfinex's stolen Bitcoin.
Me too.
To the Bitcoiners out there that maybe are talking to the Trump policy teams, it would be wonderful to see something on the books that says seized Bitcoin is provably burnt, rather than held onto. So there's not a direct incentive to seize people's Bitcoin. And in the case of Bitfinex's Bitcoin, like, that should be returned. they got hacked and then they seized it from the hacker.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, let's talk about the game theory, building on the strategic reserve bill. And let's run with the assumption that it does get signed. How does this change the dynamic of the Bitcoin market?
I think it happens. The question is a timing thing, right? And from what I hear, you know, Trump wants to move fast on a lot of things too. Like, 4 years goes by very quickly. So nothing moves fast, you know. Everything takes time. So we'll see. But I mean, look, the thesis is pretty simple, right? Is I think every individual, every company, and every government will realize eventually that the ultimate goal of a productive individual company or government is to accumulate as much Bitcoin as possible. So that stands to reason that pretty much every functioning government will have a strategic Bitcoin reserve at some time, and every profitable company will have one, and every productive individual will have one. The US, obviously, as the world's reserve currency, would be a particularly big signal, I think, to the rest of the world that they should get their shit together and start accumulating.
Yeah. I recorded an episode of TFTC yesterday with Pascal Huygi from Switzerland, and we got on this conversation. I think it's a good thought experiment to have here. And I'm a little apprehensive to say this because last cycle, this word proved to be
proved to be a bit
early and was pushed by people that destroyed the market for a couple of years. Super cycle.
It's not a fucking super cycle, Marty. I thought you were going to say the institutions are coming.
Institutions are here. That's
well. The guy who said that got fucking wrecked on BlockFi and then tried to turn it around with his new book, "How to Live an Extraordinary Life."
I think we're all living extraordinary lives right now. Okay,
Marty, it's not a super cycle. You think it's going to be a super cycle? You think 85% correction?
Let's walk through the multivariate situation that we find ourselves in right now. Strategic reserve on the docket for the United States. That sends a massive signal out. 16 years in now, 16 years from Bitcoin being live in production in a few months, 16 years since the white paper a couple of weeks ago. Start just from a brand awareness perspective, 16 years in marketing, you talk about how many touch points does it take to convert an individual into a customer, a user, whatever it may be. How many touch points have a critical mass of individuals had with Bitcoin to convert to users this cycle? I think a considerable amount. That's a certain amount of supply that comes off the market. But I think one dynamic that exists this time around that has never existed is now these disparate demand drivers that are pulling a butt ton of supply off the market and holding it for the long term. So MicroStrategy is a great example of that. It's been doing it for the last 4 years, but it seems like many other companies are looking at what MicroStrategy has done in terms of the value of their company and the value they deliver to shareholders by implementing that strategy. And there are others that are looking to do that. MicroStrategy, we talked about last week, announced they plan on buying $42 billion worth of Bitcoin over the next 5 years. And they're not selling any of it.
Fucking insane.
You have the U.S. government explicitly in the Strategic Reserve Bill saying we're going to buy Bitcoin and hold it for at least 20 years. They want to get a million.
A million Bitcoin.
A million Bitcoin, 20 years off the market.
It's going to be expensive.
They're going to buy, 500 a day or something like that?
They're going to try
5 years. And then, we see this on the 1031 side. I think this is the cycle. And I said this on the Bitcoin Frontier podcast that released this week. I think Bitcoin is super collateral, really becomes a theme this cycle. Debify getting into the market, Unchained doing what they're doing. Companies like Battery Finance within the 1031 portfolio, Battery specifically, that use case, if that takes off and hits escape velocity, they're literally restructuring and refinancing structured credit and putting Bitcoin as collateral into these credit products that have durations of 10 to 30 years. That's an amount of supply that comes off. Externally, outside of all the demand and supply factors within Bitcoin, you have the sovereign debt crisis. Even though Trump is president, that is not going away. We'll see if they can effectively cut cost and dismantle the bureaucratic state that's really driving the expansion of that debt. But regardless, we still have $36 trillion worth of debt that needs to get paid back. A lot of that is rolling over at higher interest rates right now. If you look at the slope curve on that chart, it is getting steeper and steeper. So with all that being said, the multivariate scenario just laid out, like, you have time leading to convert people. You have new massive pools of liquidity pulling supply off and explicitly saying we're going to keep it off the market for longer than a decade. You had the sovereign debt crisis, which isn't going away. Super cycle might be in play.
This is might be in play. Are you you're either calling it or you're not calling it?
No, I'm not. I'm saying it might be in play.
Bullshit.
Might
you
be
can't
in
just
play.
Like, throw it out. You're like trying to get the benefit without, because you know I'm going to shit on you when it doesn't happen. Okay. First of all, Noster live chat, rhr.tv/stream. Shout out to the ride or dies. Seth gave us 21,000 sats. Map21 gave us 21,000 sats. Zapped us 21,000 sats. Paulie zapped us 21,000 sats. And Pablo, who I'm on, I'm on this trip with, also zapped us 21,000 sats. I literally just flew on the plane with him, and then we dispersed to our different hotel rooms. Thank you, freaks, for supporting the show. I love you guys. And week in, week out, we come here because we care about you. So thank you. Super Cycle. Okay, so let's talk about let's talk a little bit about a truly free market that is Bitcoin. Pricing in, you know, during an adoption cycle of the most scarce asset we've ever seen, right? So obviously, you know, history doesn't necessarily exactly repeat, but it tends to rhyme. And Bitcoin does have this natural halving cyclical scenario. And I also think that in truly free markets without without centralized control, there's inherently more volatility because humans are naturally volatile beings. So obviously Bitcoin now has matured as an asset, right? So if you compare previous cycles to this cycle, we have the ETFs happened in January. And as a result, we increased in price probably way, way quicker than we would have otherwise, right? Because a whole new group of individuals had exposure to Bitcoin, and we've seen the ETFs just absolutely gobbling up Bitcoin because people are buying their shares. So that is obviously one change. Now, governments entering the picture, particularly the Trump administration being very favorable towards Bitcoin, and let's be honest, greater crypto, is obviously another change that we haven't seen in the past. The third change, I mean, Eric Trump was retweeting Michael Saylor yesterday. Like, we've never seen the son of a president, like, retweet.
Quote tweeting. It's more exactly. More impactful than a retweet.
Exactly. If you say so. It's obviously a change in modern sentiment, particularly with the future leadership of America. And then the third piece is we are seeing at this point in the cycle, there's a greater separation between Bitcoin and everything else. You know, Ethereum is down like 80% in Bitcoin terms. It's 50% down from its all-time high in dollar terms. We haven't seen that kind of separation. You know, I was at LibitConf in Argentina earlier. That is a more crypto-focused event. It's not Bitcoin-specific. And vibes were good, but vibes were not like how high you would think they would be, right? But I imagine at SatsConf tomorrow, which is the largest Bitcoin conference in South America, like Bitcoin-only conference in South America, it's going to be fucking insane, right? So there's definitely a separation there. And then all of that combined, also last cycle, I really do think that the degeneracy of FTX, the degeneracy of Celsius, the degeneracy of Barry Silbert dampened the height that we saw on the last cycle and increased the low. We went lower than we would have both on the highs and on the lows in that cycle. So this one, you know, maybe we would go higher than we would have otherwise.
It's calling for 1.8.
Maybe we go higher than we would otherwise, but I'm not making any price predictions this cycle. I'm stay humble, stack sats freaks. I've never made a price prediction at a price higher than where we are currently. But I still think there will be, at some point, degens will get caught up in bullshit. And this time it'll be a new breed of degens. It'll be like nation states and suits. Like, we already had a taste of suit degeneracy last cycle. And we will have an 85%-ish correction at some point. Now, the question is, how high do you go first? And then where does that low settle at? And I think, however you cut it, staying humble and stacking sats is the way to proceed here. Like, there's no better strategy in place. And just try and, you know, build a long-term, save long-term in Bitcoin, like for your family's sake.
I don't know.
I can't believe we're so early in the cycle. You're already calling for Super Cycle. I'm disappointed in you, Marty.
It's going to happen when people least expect it. And you can see my natural apprehension to even utter the phrase and put this idea out there, because I think many people are beholden to the idea that we're going to have these four-year cycles. At some point, the four-year cycles go away. I think it happens faster than many expect. That's my contrarian take. And it's a bullish contrarian take.
No, I think what happens is maybe, but I think what happens, generally speaking, is Bitcoin purchasing power increases with adoption, and volatility decreases with adoption. But ultimately, so like at some point, Bitcoin will find this place where it's the most stable asset in the world, but increases with human flourishing, like increases with GDP or however you want to measure it. I mean, we'll measure it in basically Bitcoin purchasing power. Like Bitcoin will be the thermometer that measures it all. But it will continue, it'll continue to accrue purchasing power with that. But the volatility will, the actual volatility will decreases with adoption as well. I think the four-year cycles, as that is going on, might still play a part. I mean, but that amount could decrease, right? But you still have like the supply shock, right? You still have this supply shock every time a halving happens. Now, the question is, do people start pricing it in? Because no one's, like, even up until this point, like, I feel like halvings are never properly priced in. So we'll see how it plays out. But you have to realize, too, like, even at that, like, fully, fully mature state where, you know, almost every person in the world is touching Bitcoin on a constant basis, Bitcoin will respond to macro situations, right? In a macro liquidity crisis, Bitcoin will be the asset that is sold.
I agree with that.
So it I guess in that situation, I guess I agree with you that the halvings will become less relevant. Like that four-year cycle would become less and less relevant, because what would become relevant would be like a global recession, or like would become way more relevant than the halving cycles would be like a global recession or a global war, or, you know, like aliens invading us or the sun blowing up or some shit.
The sun blows up, we're fucked.
Yeah, I mean, some people would be probably, but it depends when the sun actually does blow up. Like, you're clearly not reading enough science fiction.
Yeah, I mean, everybody knows sun blows up eventually in a supernova. I don't think it's anytime soon. Yeah. And I mean, let's dive in. Let's get nerdy with it too. Like, anchoring back to last cycle, if you're looking at the degens who created that over leverage situation, that's why, again, I think these market dynamics are a bit different. People this cycle, most people are taking out Bitcoin to use it as leverage. Like I said earlier, I think we're going to begin to see that practice, instead of historically what it's been is you take the Bitcoin and then you go bet on shitcoins, which are extremely illiquid and more volatile than Bitcoin. Like Bitcoin being leveraged moving forward, I think the trend will begin to favor like using Bitcoin as collateral for credit products that touch the fiat world and have much less of a risk profile compared to going and betting with shitcoins. And then in those structured products, like the companies taking that Bitcoin risk have alternative revenue streams that aren't completely hitched to the Bitcoin and broader crypto economy. And so the chance of them blowing up maybe is a bit decreased. The ETFs, I think, really accelerate that trend too, because historically you've had this over-speculation in broader crypto, because you get your Bitcoin, you send it to an exchange, you convert it to another shitcoin that you want to speculate on, and that avenue simply does not exist via the ETFs, which people are predominantly funneling in to Bitcoin through this cycle. I don't know. What I'm trying to say is the dynamics, when you consider the amount of time Bitcoin's been around, the different types of demand drivers that will lock supply up for a long period of time, the inability to easily go speculate on broader crypto via the ETFs. I don't know. It's just a bit different. nation states, obviously, too.
I mean, what you're saying is that there won't be any degeneracy this cycle.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying the degeneracy can be way less systemic than it has been historically, especially as, like, to your point about Bitcoin being the first to be sold. That's another thing to factor in. Like, if we 10x from here, like, the liquidity profile of Bitcoin is over $10 trillion. And yes, many people may sell Bitcoin when things get hairy, whether it's recession, war, whatever it may be. But the liquidity of the market will be in order of magnitude higher. And the potential effect on price could be less than like 85%, probably not 15%, maybe. I don't know. Just let me be bullish for a little bit.
Look, I'm down. That sounds fucking awesome. I think the suits probably have something in store for us that I can't even like comprehend how much degeneracy was required to make it happen. Like, I don't even know. I don't pretend to know like how they will blow up. Bitcoin tends to humble people. In my history in Bitcoin, it's not like a option of whether or not you stay humble. You're either humble or you get humbled by Bitcoin. Bitcoin tends to be a tricky beast in that way. What are you looking up right now? Has Marty zapped today?
Yeah.
Is there a new version that has Odell Zap today? Is that what I just saw?
Yeah, there's a new version. It's not firewalled anymore. Odell is Zap today. Marty Ben is not Zap today.
Oh, that's wonderful. I mean, I Zap every day, so they could just hard code that in. It would be simpler code.
The site's broken. I've Zapped today.
But I just want to pull it back a little bit because obviously we're in it for the tech. This trip was led by the Human Rights Foundation. A bunch of us were guests of the Human Rights Foundation. And the idea was to travel on the ground throughout South America to see how Bitcoin was being used. Last week I mentioned that we went to the Cuevas in Buenos Aires. And that's the black markets money exchange in Buenos Aires. And I had a freak ask me what that was like. And I was intentionally a little bit vague until I actually left the country. Just to explain, like, you like go into, well, I'm sure there's many different versions, but the version we went into is we had a contact that let them know we were coming. We showed up. It was only a few of us. We showed up to an office building. You go up to, you let security know that you're, it just like looks like a regular office building. You let security know. Security definitely knows who those, like what they're doing up there. Like, they're definitely in on it. Then you go up to the floor. And then at that point, there's like cameras fucking everywhere. And it was just very professionalized. It was like a legit, like clearly they had been doing it for a while, and they knew what they were doing. And to me, like, it really opened up to me, like, how much, like, in places in the world where you really, really need Bitcoin, there's a lot of sophisticated ways that people figure out how to get around that. And you know, it's like very much like an iron sharpens iron thing. So then we also went to a Bitcoin mining site that was in South America that was incredibly impressive. I was blown away by their sophistication. They were in the middle of fucking nowhere. They repair their own ASICs. They repair up to 30 ASICs a day, like 20 to 30 ASICs a day they're repairing on site because they're in the middle of nowhere, so they can't outsource it. And everyone there was trained in-house in-country to make it happen. And they had all the different types of miners. You know, they had air-cooled, hydro-cooled, immersion-cooled, and crazy panels, you know, showing everything that was happening. It was really, really impressive. And then we went up to Jeri, which is like in the middle of nowhere, Brazil. Brazil's a fucking huge country. Great people, huge country. And there was a Bitcoin community center up there on this, in this beach town, in this beautiful, gorgeous beach town that is incredibly hard to reach. And children there were learning how to use Bitcoin. There were Stack Sat shirts, like Sat's the standard. They're like using Lightning. The different merchants over there were using Lightning. And it just makes me incredibly optimistic that, obviously in an ideal world, we would like to see governments and every other institution we rely on work with more efficiency and morality. But even if they don't, the people tend to find a way, and that there's a lot of empowerment with these tools, and it's been quite inspiring. And I, you know, right after this show, I'm going to go meet a bunch of people in the Sao Paulo Bitcoin community, and I'm quite excited about it. Very bullish.
So bullish. And while we're talking, jealous that I'm not able to be on this trip with you. You've been sending me pictures with some of our friends, and I'm like, God damn it. It's okay. With that, another bullish story, probably the first bullish report from the Financial Freedom Newsletter that HRF puts out there this week, coming from the BIS, the Bank of International Settlements, the bank of all banks. It departs its CBDC project, Enbridge. The Bank of International Settlements has stepped away from Project Enbridge, a global central bank digital currency platform between the central banks of China, Saudi Arabia, the United Emirates, Hong Kong, and Thailand. Project Enbridge aims to improve cross-border transactions using CBDCs backed by national banks. The BIS's departure from the project comes amid rising concerns that the countries running it could abuse the platform. Considering the involvement of authoritarian regimes, it is questionable why the BIS was involved in the first place, given the growing recognition of the threats CBDCs pose to financial freedom and democracy. With the departure of the BIS, Enbridge remains in the hands of China, which will lead the project's technological development. The Bank of All Banks stepping back from a central bank digital currency project. And it's another thing that Ryan and I were talking about at lunch. He's been following like the BRICS currency, and he was telling me, I didn't even pick this up, but apparently like one of the latest BRICS meetings, Russia and Pakistan were talking about how they're going to do like barter trade for wheat and soybeans, whatever. And they were trying to like figure out how to price that. It's like these countries are not going to be able to coordinate it's for us, the CBDC or a BRICS cuckbuck on the world. It like to think that they're going to be able to organize, agree, build and launch a suitable project, I think, is very naive, and that plays strongly into Bitcoin's favor.
Yeah, Mandible's in Bitcoin standard. We're just in the early chapters of the book. I think regardless of what governments decide, people will reject CBDCs if they have a better option, that option being Bitcoin. So maybe some find success short term, but long term, they're pretty much doomed to fail in the marketplace. Like, why would you use a CBDC over Bitcoin? Now, I think people should be cautious. I mean, when I say people, I mean us. I think Bitcoiners should be cautious that I think there's a success scenario, probably the most likely success scenario for Bitcoin, is that it becomes a reserve currency of the world, but maybe only 5%, 10% are using it as freedom money. And in that situation, I think the movement has failed. And so what you see in that type of situation is you see, you know, kind of Microsoft strategy, right? Embrace, extend, extinguish. Microsoft strategy with open source, where you try and basically use Bitcoin as much like a CBDC as possible. Like, you still can't debase the currency, but you can control and surveil it. And I think a perfect example of what of that recently is the UMA standard being pushed by Lightspark, for instance. It's effectively trying to add a compliance layer and protocolize it to quote unquote comply with the travel rule, right? So where the receiver and the sender are sending effectively KYC information between each other. And it's being conflated with the greater Lightning network. But if it was to be successful, it would effectively bifurcate the network. You'd have like Freedom Lightning Network, you'd have the open interoperable Lightning network, and then you would have this UMA compliance standard. And I think we need to be very cautious about this. Bitcoiners, specifically in bull markets, we tend to get really carried away and excited. And I enjoy it as much as the rest of you. Like, do not get me wrong. Anyone who's been listening to the show for long enough knows that's the case. But we have to be very cautious. And there are definitely many Bitcoiners around us that are not necessarily in it for the freedom, and will make very big compromises. And particularly in an administration that seems very Bitcoin and quote unquote crypto focused in the Trump administration and wants to move very fast. There's a lot of room for bad policy and, regulatory moats being created and overcompliance being created and surveillance systems being created. So I think we need to be very cautious there.
Cautious is the wrong word.
And proactive. Need to be
proactive is the word. Get out there. Make sure that you're using the technology, teaching others how to use it. And particularly, we're going like into this bull market. I think that'll be another... I'll say it. I'll be bold. I'll say it. I mean, merchant adoption was a big theme in the 2014 to 2016 era. Never materialized because Bitcoin really wasn't there yet. I could see the price goes up, merchant adoption being a theme that actually gets some legs this time around. And I think it'll be important to teach merchants how to use something like Zaprite, which allows you to easily connect wallets that you control, particularly if you're receiving larger amounts of Bitcoin, larger payments in Bitcoin. Like Zaprite makes it very easy to create invoicing software that pulls an XPub from a wallet that you control to receive money. I think that is one of the lowest hanging fruits we can do. Merchants adopting Bitcoin that receive relatively large payments, receiving on-chain Bitcoin to wallets they control. That's a goal that we should strive for this cycle as people are onboarding.
100%. I mean, I think all this stuff just takes time, right? So there should always be more merchant adoption than there was yesterday. But the question is timing. I think there should always be more self-custody usage, secure Bitcoin usage, private Bitcoin usage, freedom-focused Bitcoin usage. But I think we can't take our foot off the gas. I think now more than ever, I think Bitcoin is more or less inevitable at this point. Like, I think we've pretty much passed the point of no return. But Bitcoin's mass use as freedom money is not. And I think it's more important than ever to have a strong focus on that and push the ball forward.
Agreed. With that, I know you got to jump here in 2 minutes. We'll read the top four boost from Rabbit Hole Recap 329 and the Fed. Ron Paul back in the conversation. Let's go. Sir Bitcoin, 50,000 sats. Chain duel in Brazil at SatsConf. Compete for sats in the Lightning and Noster-enabled video game. Come play the tournaments on the 8th at 1:45 and 3:45 p.m. for a chance to win 1 million sats. Follow Chain Duel on Noster for more info. At Toxic Bitcoiner, 22,000 sats. Beware, freaks. For sale, Fractal Encrypt Infinity Day private key number 20 of 21 on scarce.city. Other key holders include Michael Saylor, Eric Weiss, Guy Swan, Tomer Strohlite, and Knut Svanholm. 1% of the proceeds will be donated to the OpenSats General Fund. Go to scarce.city for listing details. Mandibles, then Bitcoin Standard. And there's a link to the Scarcity Marketplace if you want to go. I gotta do it. This is what we do. https://scarce.city/marketplace/physical/bitcoin-infinity-day-private-key-20-21-made-buy-fractal-encrypt. That's the URL. John Gordon.
Fractal Encrypt is a fucking legend. He's one of the best Bitcoin artists we have in the space. By the way, someone in the Noster live chat is not telling me what their name is, but he mentioned, Marty, that you look absolutely jacked, and I would say that you've been crushing it with your workout and health regime. You're an inspiration to us all.
I've been getting back. I did chest and shoulders yesterday, so I'm a little inflated right now.
It looks good.
I'm trying to get to like NFL Combine 225 20 times. I'm getting close.
Are you really? No way you're getting close to that.
Oh yeah, I'm at like 15 right now.
Oh, 220 20 times. I thought you meant like NFL Combine level. I would love
that. Is NFL Combine level?
I know, but I would donate. Is there like a place where you can do a NFL Combine, like a full NFL Combine? As like a tourist,
I wouldn't be surprised. But price goes up, I'm sure we can pay for it.
I would donate to charity. I would donate to open source developers to see that.
Let's do it. I don't have any ligaments in my left knee though, so I don't know how I would do it. Like on the cone shuttle. At John Gordon, 21,000 sats. Bullish on Freedom Tech, bullish on Argentina, bullish on Bitcoin. Bring Afuera to the U.S. government. Stay humble and stack sats.
Afuera.
Afuera.
Great advice, by the way.
Last but not least, user 280-66262. 20,000 sats. Lady listener here. We got the lady listeners. Thank you for listening, ladies. We bring the sultry Bitcoin news to you week in and week out.
Hi, mom.
Is that your mom?
No, but she'll probably be listening to this.
Are your mom listens? That's wonderful, Logan. I can't believe you denigrated our lady listeners like that.
I did not denigrate. I mean,
you certainly barely didn't exist. I think we have the most female listeners of a male-hosted Bitcoin podcast.
Agreed. Ladies, let's pump the numbers. Go tell your friends.
Yeah, we have Pringle Stacks in the Nostradamus chat.
She's an OG.
She's a ride or die.
Ladies, go tell your friends. They need to get the Bitcoin news too. I'm excited. Cautiously optimistic. Stay vigilant. Stay proactive. Hold people accountable. I know we're all excited right now. The prospect of a better future seems to be there, but accountability is very important. We need to hold our leaders accountable. And so I think that's temper your optimism, which is through the roof for me personally. I'm pretty sure you guys can tell with vigilance and the drive to hold people accountable when things transition next year.
Read the mandibles, stay humble, stack sets.
Peace and love.